The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 468 for Sunday, September 29th, 2013. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, cool stuff found. Sometimes you even send in answers. We fill that in with some answers from our own. We package it all together. We put a nice bow on it. And together, we all learn several new things about the Mac, life, the universe, everything. Each and every time we come here. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
John F. Braun. How you doing today, my friend?
I'm celebrating National Coffee Day.
Are you? Are you celebrating it appropriately?
I have some nice black coffee in my Apple coffee mug.
All right.
When we were out there last or a couple of years ago.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Is it National Coffee Day? I don't even. I'm trying to look on Wikipedia here, but that's not, it's not going to work out for me. Yeah. September 29th is, oh, that's right. So there are national coffee days, and it's National Coffee Day here in the U.S., Canada, England, Ethiopia, Malaysia, and Sweden, and Japan and Austria pick it up in a couple of days, and Germany and Switzerland had it yesterday. This is odd that we wouldn't, where is the National Coffee Day lobby when you need them? To work to, tie all this together so we can have one International Coffee Day.
Somebody's slacking off.
I know these guys. Why are we paying them? These lobbyists are just there getting fat and high on coffee, but not really getting the job done. What kind of show is this supposed to be? Hey, did you get your iPhone yet, John?
No, I got my, I got my mailer to send my old one back, but, no, not yet.
Okay.
I keep checking the status and it keeps saying ship, pending 10/7.
Oh, okay. All right. So my 5S arrived on Wednesday. I was actually doing Apple Context Machine with Brian. We'll put a link in the show notes because I did ACM for the first time this week. When UPS tried to deliver it and I was kind of on the look, I was stupid. I should have just done the pre-sign thing and been done with it. But I didn't. I figured I would see the truck and it would be kind of funny that I'd have to take a break from the show. And so my showmanship actually got the best of me this time because about halfway through the show, I looked. I'm like, I wonder where UPS is. And then I see, oh, delivery attempted. Oh, no. But Lisa was able to go and pick it up that night. So yes, my magical gold iPhone 5S has arrived. And I actually put a juice peel, JUCEPEL, glass cover on it. So I've got this hot rod red cover, screen cover on the thing. And then with the gold, accents or whatever, it actually looks kind of nice. I like it. It's good. It's crazy, but, I like it. It's good. The fingerprint sensor thing works. The flow of that works really well once I got the right fingers in there so that all I do is press down the button and it unlocks. But it's always secure or, as secure as one's fingerprint can be. So
did you try with the cats?
No, I haven't tried it with the cats. I was going to see if our new Mac Geek Gab mascot and TMO mascot wanted to.
Oh, right.
Wanted, yes, because we got a new mascot that arrived this week. Hector D. Bird, which many of you may know from Ambrosia Software's history. She has come to take up permanent residence here at TMO Towers East. She arrived actually on my birthday on Tuesday. And she has totally taken over the household. I'll tell you, man, she's an African gray parrot and it's not like having a pet. It is truly like having another active member of the household. This thing is super, super smart. You know, they say intelligence wise, somewhere in the range of a, you know, 2 to 5 year old human kind of thing. It's really amazing, you know, seeing how that little bird brain, I mean, it's lizard brain, right? It's not mammalian brain. So there's some differences there, but it's really interesting. So,
well, yes. It's been said she rules with an iron wing,
an iron beak, my friend,
or an iron beak.
Yes. Yes, she does. And that she does. Yes, I am but her faithful minion now. So.
And word has it, she's kind of a pushy little prima donna, I think was the, someone commented on Facebook about that. Cause she's like, get me my banana, mop yes. the floor, get me my almond, mop the floor. Tell me I'm pretty, mop the
floor. Mop the floor. Pretty much. That's it. She'll do shots. You can give her a little bottle cap.
I saw that.
Yep. And then you pour water into the bottle cap and she'll drink it out of the bottle cap. It's actually really funny. She makes this noise that kind of indicates that's what she wants to do. But yeah, she's really vocal. It's cool. She's a cool pet. A cool, I don't know, not like I said, more than a pet. Anyway, so now Hector D. Bird is here. But no, I didn't try Hector's beak on the iPhone 5S. But the battery on this thing, I used it all day yesterday. And by about 1 a.m. when I went to sleep, it was down to 43% or something, which to me is a dream come true after the iPhone 5. So I'm hoping that I can replicate yesterday's great success with battery life, because that to me is fantastic. So I'm hoping that continues. And other than that, I don't, the camera on it, the low light stuff. We did this gig last night. We kind of concocted our own little family friendly rock and roll show, ran from 7 to 10. There were kids there and all that. It was awesome. It was totally awesome. I posted a picture or two to Instagram that I took with the iPhone 5, and you know, it was in a hall. It's called the Rochester Opera House where we did it, but it flattens out and they took the seats out. It's actually really cool, John. You should look this up as a tangent. It's the Rochester Opera House in Rochester, New Hampshire. It's one of the, it may be the only remaining theater in the U.S. that has a mechanically movable floor. So when they want to do something like we did last night, they take all the chairs out and they drop the floor down so that it's flat. But if they want to do like a play or a show, they actually raise the back of the floor up and it sits at an angle, and then they put chairs in and you've got like theater seating, and you know, it's what you'd want. And it takes about 45 minutes, they say, to do the whole thing. And they've got stuff on the website about it. It's really geeky. It's really cool. But I took pictures, you know, there, and it almost, when in looking at the pictures, it was like, wow, there's almost too much light in these pictures. It doesn't give it that dark vibe that it kind of had. So it's good. It's good. I like it. I like it. So I'm excited for you to get yours.
Yeah, me too. Because there's some things that we'll talk about shortly that I can't do with my 4.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
Yeah. But again, I got the envelope from Verizon, which, yeah, it's just a padded envelope. Throw it in the USPS and they'll critique it and then give me some money. So,
yeah, that's good. I think I'm going to wind up selling. I had set mine up to go to Gazelle, and our old iPhone 4, which is the one that we're retiring out as the various phones move through the family chain. And it's a 32 gig iPhone 4. And I think I'd gotten a quote of 140 or something from Gazelle on it, which was really good. And I'd locked that in, but I figured I'd try my hand at eBay cause, I had some time, and, I think I'm going to get about 240 for it on eBay. So, pretty stoked about that. But, you know, you got to go through the process of selling it on eBay and dealing with those crazy people there and, you know, all that stuff. But I figured, what the heck, I'd lock it into Gazelle and try this. And if this works out, great. Otherwise, I'll take the money that Gazelle offers. Is good.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. What else do we have? Any little errata before we jump into Raymond here, John?
Yeah, we should get to it, man.
Get to it. All right. That's true. Yeah, last show we didn't get to a lot of questions. In fact, we've mixed many of those in here because of this. So, yeah, go. Let's go.
All right. Yeah, this one is kind of all over the place, but I think I helped focus it. So I'll start here. So Raymond writes, I have an issue when I try to add a phone number to my contacts app. When I select a phone number and even the address of a company and then go to add, control clicking on the address and the phone number, Skype opens up for me to add the contact. I want it to go to the contact app. Looking around, I find that my services in Safari has the Skype icon add contact. I don't know how to reset the item alone. I imagine if I do a restore defaults in services, Skype would no longer be the icon I see in my Safari services menu. In order to stop Skype from opening up, I deleted it. Now, when I try and add a contact, nothing happens. The add contact item in services is cleared. How did I add contact to the macOS service in the first place? All right, so that's the initial question. Then you chimed in, and I think to help steer me in the right direction here, then you said that you thought I'd have the answer for this one. And I do, I think, have an answer for this one, but not the path that you suggested. And then you were suggesting data detectors may be able to solve this. So my response was as follows. The thing is, I think we're talking about two different methods here to get data into contacts.
Okay.
Or two potential ways.
Okay.
So one, it is true. So services, for people that have not used them, are items that are made available typically in the application menu or for the application in question. And when you highlight some data, a service that is appropriate for the type of data you highlighted may show up. And as Raymond said, if you highlight something like, for example, a phone number and you have Skype installed, what will happen is it'll say add contacts and that service is registered to Skype, which is not what he wants. Now, then I started digging around and I'm like, well, because it sounds like what he's expecting is when he says add contacts is that it goes to contacts. And it's like, okay, that sounds reasonable.
That's a reasonable expectation. Yes, I would agree.
But I do not believe. So I'll just describe some of the digging I did is that services are interesting in Mac OS because there's a couple of ways that you can add a service. One is that if you look, and I found two places, there may be more, but I think there's only two places you can have a service. One is if you go to /library/services, and the other place that I found some is /system/library/services.
That makes sense.
Now, I looked in there and I didn't find anything. I didn't find add contacts. And then doing a bit more research, the other way that services can be added, as we saw, is in an application. It can be embedded in an application and it kind of does it behind the scenes and that you won't find it in either of these services directories. So I did the same thing. So, you know, highlighted something, said add contact when it showed up. And sure enough, it would add the number to the Skype contacts.
Yeah.
And when I deleted Skype, that no longer worked. So the first thing that I'm going to suggest is that, although it sounds reasonable that is default behavior for that one, I don't believe there is any default behavior for that particular service.
Right. I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. This is a Skype only thing, right?
Right. And I think what happens, though, but if you do look, and he did notice, if you do go into the services configuration, you will see one called add contacts. And I think it's typical. So I think that's a placeholder, is that Apple leaves that there, or maybe Skype put it there.
Right. Right.
Or it may be there, but not activated. And it's, you know, put there if you'd like to add that. So one suggestion I had is that you may want to Automator will let you create services. So you may want to explore creating a service that'll do this in Automator.
Do we have
that can be kind of a pain in the neck?
I don't know. Automator's pretty easy once you have to kind of get in and mess with it to get into its headspace. But I don't know. It's pretty cool. And there's a great Ars Technica article called How to Build Mac OS X Services with Automator and Shell Scripting that will walk you through that. So we'll certainly put that in the show notes for those of you that want to head down that path. It's got some great screenshots that show how this all works. So it's cool.
Right. So that's one way to do it. But I think the other way to do it, Dave, is what you suggested, is that there is something called data detectors built into the OS, and but they're baked into only specific applications, and that they're not really global as far as I can tell.
Okay.
And one that many people have seen is that if you are in Apple's Mail app and you hover over something that appears to be either a phone number or an address, you'll see a little line drawn around it and then a little arrow. And if you click on the arrow, it'll then display the data and say, hey, you want to add this to contacts? And it'll try to be smart about either adding it to an existing one or creating a new one for you.
Right, right.
Now, it's possible, though, that you may have disabled that. And there are articles that tell you how to do that. Or you could just do it on the command line. So what I suggested is maybe this is disabled in your setup. And basically, if you go to the terminal, you can change that setting. So here, to re-enable it, you would say, and it's quick here, I'll read it out,
yeah,
defaults, space, write, space, com.apple.mail, space, disable data detectors, space, no.
And you'll put that in the show notes as a little code block, won't you? So that people can see it. That's awesome.
So I think that is now, unfortunately, the data detectors are not in all applications. So if you, for example, you know, like he said, if you highlight something in Safari, I don't think a data detector is going to step in and be smart about taking that data and letting you put it in context. You're going to have to do it in Mail.
Right. Right. Right.
The only other thing I saw, I didn't try this, but the thing is, some apps may have a setting where you can enable data detectors. Now, I didn't find one for Safari, but you know, maybe worth a shot here. So you could use the general format of what I just said here. And for example, I found one that said at some point in the past, although we don't have iChat anymore, at some point in the past, you could enable data detectors in iChat, and you would do a very, very similar thing in the terminal. You would say default space write space com.apple.iChat space enable data detectors space.
Oh, interesting.
And then a one, which I think is the same as yes.
Right, right. Interesting. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you modify this string, I don't know if you could do com.apple.safari or whatever the...
I don't think so. I did some searching here, and somebody did have... There's a good hack for this where what you do is you tell Safari, mail the contents of this web page, and then it puts it into Mail, and then at that point you can use data detectors on the text of the message and then just throw away the draft. So that's the hack. That's the workaround. And right. That's a smart workaround. You know, it gets the data somewhere where you can mess with it very, very quickly. But yeah, you can't do it right away.
Now this one here, and I'm not going to read this one out here, but I remember at one point in the past, I actually found where the data detectors are defined.
Yep.
But I don't think you want to, you know, like MC Hammer says, don't touch.
Well, you can't touch
it. Don't touch it. Well, you could try, but you're probably going to break something. But it's buried deep in the private frameworks directory in the OS.
I wouldn't do that.
But I'll link to the graphic that I show here. But you may want to look at them because you could examine them, because I think it describes what each one does. How to parse certain data here. And there's one called web URL, another one called tracking number, another one called phone number. If you're adventurous, maybe you could create your own or modify these. But I may try that. But
have fun.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, let us know how that goes. Oh, that's good. That's good. It's an interesting tour through all of that stuff. It gets crazy. All right. We had a question from Jared that the answer that we initially gave him, though it didn't solve his problem. We'll talk about what solved this problem too, but I want to make sure we talk about the processes, because there is some stuff that is a very general troubleshooting tips, and the problem has to do with audio and audio quality. So Jared writes, we'll explain the situation. He says, I've got a super awesome 13-inch MacBook Air running OS 10. I run it connected to a 24-inch LED cinema display in clamshell mode and route the audio through the cinema display. After a few minutes of audio playback, be it from the web, iTunes or any other source, the audio gets all staticky. I use the same cinema display with two other Macs and have no problem with either of those. I have no problem with the audio on the MacBook Air without the cinema display. If I pause the audio for a moment and then resume playback, the static clears up for a minute or two, then begins again. Any thoughts? Okay, when you get staticky audio, the first place to look is someplace that's not entirely obvious. Go to in your utilities folder, or you can find it with Spotlight. And for what it's worth, I launch almost all of my apps with Spotlight. I do command spacebar and start typing the name of the app. And then I hit enter or return rather when the app shows up in the little Spotlight menu. So the name of the app is called Audio MIDI Setup. And I believe it lives in the utilities folder. And it's an interesting little thing. When you pull it up, you can see all of your sound input. And I hope I don't screw up what we're doing with the podcast here by messing with Audio MIDI Setup while we're in the middle of all this. You can still hear me, right, John?
Yes.
Excellent. That's good stuff. So what you can see is you see all of your audio devices, be they real devices or what I would call virtual devices that sort of exist inside the system. And for any one of them, you can choose it and it'll be an input or an output device, or some of them certainly can do both. And you get to set two things that are very important. The format of the output and in terms of the bit rate, as well as the sample rate. And for most of what you're doing, you probably want that sample rate to be 44.1 kilohertz or 44,100 hertz. And some devices will take different sample rates, some devices will not. And when you've got a rate mismatch, that's when you can start to get staticky audio. And I have seen this happen and it's driven me crazy troubleshooting it because it's just not the first place that you look. So I want to kind of push that message out here that this is certainly a place to look. Now, for many audio problems, this will solve it. For Jared's, it didn't. As it turns out, Jared wasn't connecting his MacBook directly to the cinema display, which made, you know, email based troubleshooting challenging, I will say. But what it turns out was happening is he had it going through. I want to get the right things up here. He said he was going through a Hinge dock and then using a Kinex SnapX I believe the SnapX is a KVM switch, K-A-N-E-X, SnapX. Let's see what that is. I think it's a multi-keyboard switcher for an Apple Cinema display. And he started isolating things and pulled all of it out and just connected the MacBook Air directly to the Cinema display, and problem went away. So he knew it was at least one of these two devices, or perhaps the way these two devices work together. So he pulled the Kinex SnapX out, which is this keyboard switcher thing, or keyboard and monitor switcher thing, and the problem went away. So even with the Hinge dock in there, the problem went away. So it in his scenario, for whatever reason, this SnapX was introducing some USB-based interference into the system or something that caused this audio hiccup to occur. So good troubleshooting on Jared's part to, you know, narrow things down and isolate. And that's the trick, is change one thing, test, change something else, test. Don't change five things, because then you know, even if the problem's solved, you're still kind of back to where you started from, that you don't know where the problem exists to begin with. So excellent troubleshooting, Jared. And I'm glad you got it fixed.
It's eating the bits.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something. It's hard to say, but you know, you could see the same thing with a simple, and I've seen it with a simple USB hub, right? Where it, if it's just not passing the data exactly right, audio is very, very particular. Video actually is very forgiving. Our eyes will make up for things that that aren't quite right. But with audio, you don't get that. It's got to be perfect. So there you go. What do you got next for us, John?
What do I got? I got a triple D reference pointer here. Or double pointer here. Oh, man. One of my first programming jobs, some programmer was doing this and it infuriated me. It's like, stop showing off. There's no reason to have triple D reference pointers. Come on. Maybe double. But anyways, this is one that I received from my buddy Mike T. Rose via the Twitters. And he's with TUAW.
Yep.
And it was pointing to an article. So yeah, it's only a double pointer. Pointing to an article by Steve Sandy. And he found something rather neat, which I can't take advantage of, unfortunately. And it's regarding setting up an Apple TV.
Okay.
And actually, I think that it also links to a support article. But if you get an Apple TV that has software 6 on the Apple TV and you have an iOS 7 device, what you can do is hold, qualify that, an iOS 7 device of beyond.
Yeah, 4S, iPhone 4S or later, dual processor iOS 7 device, I think is what's required here.
And actually tried this because I recently got an Apple TV. And it was running 6.0. So what I did is I actually did a restore on it so it would act like it was fresh out of the box. And then I tried this. Unfortunately, then the screen came up and said, oh, well, you can do this setup. So it advertises the fact that it does this. Unfortunately, it said it's not going to work with an iPhone 4 or an iPad 2. Sorry, Charlie. Or sorry, John. But basically, it'll pull configuration data, like I think your .Mac account and some localization stuff. It'll pull it out of the phone. Or iPad or whatever device.
Yeah.
So that's actually kind of a neat thing, which is, I guess, new to both, the 6.0 software and something they put in iOS 7. So you may be seeing more of that, allowing you to use your iOS device to configure other Mac devices.
I think it's great.
Apple devices.
Yeah. I think it's great.
Apple TV and iOS, is that running iOS?
Mm-hmm.
What? It is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice when they open that up to, you know, allow several third-party apps, more third-party. We'll see if that ever happens. It would be nice.
Okay, yeah, you know, it's very iOS-like. So I did notice, you know, the time I've been playing with it, like one thing I noticed, I kind of did it by accident, is that when I held down the button on the remote and I was over an icon on the screen, it would jiggle. And I'm like, oh, I've seen that before. It actually lets you move the position of icons. Except the ones that they build in, but third-party services, you can move the icon. And I think the other one I found is if you're on the About screen and you hold the down button, it'll cycle through some information about your network connection.
Oh, I didn't realize. I got to try that.
Which was cool because I actually learned what it's doing. So if you recall, I also got an Airport Express.
Right.
The new dual radio one. So my time capsule is only single radio, but this is a dual radio. And what I found... Well, I noticed this on the Apple TV. The Apple TV said, hey, I'm on channel 54. I'm like, wait a second. That's a 5 gigahertz channel, isn't it?
Yeah.
So my Apple TV is connected to my Express on a 5 gigahertz radio. And then the other devices, my TiVo is also connected to the Express. And that's using G on 2.4. And
right.
Then I think my iPhone is also connected. So so that was kind of neat to see as well.
But your iPhone will do N on 2.4.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are three devices that are normally connected to that to that Express.
Very cool.
That was fun to see. And yeah, the Apple TV is pretty groovy. I have it plugged in, you know, HDMI into my receiver.
Yeah.
And had to actually beat my receiver up to convince it to take audio from HDMI, not the optical audio. The menus are a nightmare on that thing.
On your receiver.
Yeah. I couldn't tell it. I have three HDMI ports on that thing, and it would not take audio from it. I actually had to reset the thing to convince it that it should be taking audio. It was taking video from HDMI, but not audio. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. That's fun.
But I like it. And my only confusion is I didn't know if I had set up right because I wasn't getting surround sound. And what I found out is that a lot of content is not broadcast in surround.
Not streamed in surround.
Or not streamed with surround sound.
Yeah.
I think things that you purchase, so if you purchase movies or content, then I think that has surround. And then actually I found some things in the iTunes Festival category that all of a sudden my receiver said, hey, we're getting Dolby 3/2.1. I'm like, oh, good.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. I'm glad you got that. It's like, man, between you getting your Airport Express and the iPhone 5 and listener Dave sending you, thank you, Dave, sending you the, not me, I'm not thanking myself, sending you the Apple TV, you're like moving into the future, man. It's awesome.
And I wanted to try something else, Dave.
Yes.
So a little tangent, but I think it's useful. So the thing is, I then started reading some articles. I'm like, you know what? People have said that you can mirror your video to the Apple TV. And I guess it's called AirPlay video mirroring.
That's right.
That's the good news. The bad news is that my hardware is not capable of doing that.
Your hardware, your old MacBook Pro is not capable of doing that with the built-in support of the OS.
Yes. Yes. Neither is my Mac Mini, because my Mac Mini is a, I think, mid-2010.
Yep.
And the hardware that supports this, so it's a hardware thing, I think.
I don't think that's
the other thing.
I don't think it's hardware.
Apple claims that their implementation, they claim it's a hardware issue because they're using something in some graphics chipset.
That's true.
To accomplish this. On the other hand, as you pointed out to me, AirParrot, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Can do this just fine.
I know.
So it's just Apple's implementation that requires some relatively modern hardware.
And AirParrot's cheap. It's $10. So there's a little bonus cool stuff found thing that we've talked about before, but it makes it so easy to mirror your display. It's the way you go. And they've got it not only for the Mac, but also for Windows. And that's really cool. Right. So,
wow. Because the thing I was thinking about, because I'm like, and I found some content. So the other nice thing about the Apple TV is it has some of the content that I purchased in the past. Like actually, I got into Lost. I bought the first two episodes many years ago.
Yep.
And it still knows that I did, but those were in standard def and they didn't have surround sound. So then I went down the path. Well, hey, you know, I got it all on DVD. Let me see if I can play my DVD. And that's what led me to look into the AirPlay mirroring.
Yes.
I'm like, well, I wonder if I can play my DVDs and have them mirror on the Apple TV.
Right.
And you can, but not with my setup.
Yes.
Like one
is
you have to use VLC. And number two, you need you need some, well, in my case, I would need AirParrot or something like that.
Right. Ah, very cool. I'm glad you're having fun with that, man. That's good. It's cool. I really like it for just being able to use the iPhone, you know, to beam stuff and remote control it. And, it's great. What you should get, John, is the Apple remote app. And I don't think it's free, but I think it's like $1.
I already have it on my phone.
Okay. So if you fire up the remote app while you're using your Apple TV, and this obviously is true for all of you, not just John, if you have to type something, the remote, your iPhone will actually buzz when it moves, when you get to that keyboard screen, and then a keyboard pops up on your iPhone and you can type the, whatever it is you need to type in. So like for logging into your iTunes account or, you know, even searching for movies, if you know what you're looking for and you just want to type it in, doing it with the remote is a chore because, you know, you're navigating a keyboard with a 5, you know, button device or something. But being able to just type right in on your phone and it magically appears. So the remote app is free. Somebody's telling me, well, maybe back when I got it, it wasn't free. I don't know. Maybe it always has been. Maybe I'm confusing it with the Keynote remote, which is exactly what I'm confusing it with. So thank you to GJC in the chat room at MacGeekGab.com/stream. I will say hello to all of you. Okay, cool. So yeah, that remote app is fun. And it's always been free. Indeed.
Yeah, what was the last thing I did? Oh, and you can also link to Flickr. And actually, this led me to... I didn't realize I had 3 Flickr accounts.
Yeah, I can believe that.
You may have seen that because I started... because it was like, well, which Flickr account do you want to link to? And I'm like, well, John F. Braun. Right. And it linked to this account, and there was nothing there. And I'm like, no, I got tons of pictures there. Then I realized I had a terrible mess in that I had multiple Flickr accounts that I had never really used, and I just never really realized it. So I finally consolidated. I deactivated the two that I don't use, and then I had to actually transfer the ID. So the thing is, I was logging into my current Flickr account with Gmail, with my Google account, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, man, I don't want that. I want to log in with my Yahoo account, and there is a way to do that. We'll link to that as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's flickr.com/. It's somewhere, but it allows you to switch that around because, it was a mess. But it's nice to have my Flickr pictures come up on the screensaver or other people's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. We have we take our vacation pictures and just have them as the screensaver on the Apple TV. And it's kind of cool because what'll happen is we'll fire up the Apple TV to do something. And sometimes we'll watch a long movie or whatever. But other times it's just to watch snippets of content, a song from the iTunes Music Festival or, a video stream from YouTube. And then whatever happens, we'll stop and... then we're at the main screen and we'll wind up chit-chatting as a family. And then within a minute or whatever we have it set to, our vacation pictures start showing up. And then we wind up the conversation shifts like, oh, do you remember when we did that? And it actually is really kind of a cool thing to just have that randomly sort of roll through. So this makes me think that I've got to update it's not a playlist, the album. To include the San Diego pictures that we took when we were there last year and those kinds of things. Cause it's just cool to, have these memories scrolling through your living room. So Apple can have that one for free. That's my gift back to them yeah, there you go. They can have that slogan. So the one thing that we talked about in episode 467 was how Apple screwed up podcasts in iTunes and iOS and all of that, and how if you're sharing an iTunes account, as many of us do for our app purchases, it really kills you for being able to have multiple people managing podcasts. And Tony says, hey guys, I disagree with the complaints about the way podcasts now work with iCloud. I love how the sync feature works, and here's why. We, too, share a family iTunes Apple ID for purchases and apps, and my wife and my boys each have their own podcasts. I find it great that their stuff is available on my phone for times when we're in the car and all we have is my phone. I can play their shows for them. All I do is use the stations feature in the app and in iTunes when I want just my stuff or just their stuff. The stations feature is great. I know the issue goes deeper for some folks, but I didn't hear the station option mentioned on the last show and wanted to make sure I shared it. Tony, this is brilliant because it really, for a lot of people, I think it will solve this problem. I never thought about using the stations feature this way. I immediately, when I saw it, started using it for, there's a lot of different podcasts that I like to keep up with. Some of them are work related, all the podcasts that we manage through Backbeat Media. I like to listen to those and be able to spot check them here and there too. But when I'm on my way home from gigs late at night, not last night, cause it ended at 10, family friendly gigs should, but sometimes I'm driving home at 2 a.m. And so I listen to comedy, or what I find comedy. I listen to Penn Jillette's podcast. Is Penn Sunday School is the one that I is my go-to show now that You Look Nice Today is defunct. But that it keeps me engaged because Penn is crazy and he rants. And so that keeps me laughing and engaged and I don't fall asleep. And so I'd use the stations feature for that. But I never thought about using it just to separate out people, but there's no reason as long as everybody's, respectful of everyone else. And the other issue would be the only problem with using stations would be if two people in the house listen to or more people in the house listen to the same podcast, but not together, because once it's listened to, it's marked as played and then the next person doesn't get it. So that would be the only issue. But yes, this is a killer workaround, and maybe not even a workaround. Maybe it's, kind of how it's supposed to work. So thanks for sharing that, Tony. I like it. What's up next, John? What do you got? You got a quick one for us with Kenny?
I think so. Yes. So my buddy Kenny actually asked this question on Facebook. And so I dug into it because it's been something that's been bothering me as well. And his question was, if I create a new email, how do I set the from address?
Okay.
And I'm like, that's a great question. And actually, you know, when I tried that as well on Mail App.
And more importantly, his question is, every time I create a message, the app chooses to use my iCloud account, which I don't use much. Is there any way I can designate another email account or address to be the default account for sending messages? So it's not just selecting, it's making Mail choose the from account by default. So,
yes. Now, if the key to this is in the left hand column of the Mail app that lists your mailboxes.
Okay.
And basically what happens, so normally if you highlight a certain mailbox and you create a new message, it'll do an email address that's appropriate for that mailbox. But if you have nothing highlighted, then what it does, and so this is what I found eventually, what it does is it will use the first email account that appears below on my Mac.
Okay. That's true.
And that is exactly how he had it set up. Is that his first one there was his iCloud account. Now, how do you change this, you may ask? Well, the way you change it is you basically highlight the mailbox that you want to be the default and you drag it to the top.
So just to further clarify, you twist open the inbox. If you're using Unified Inbox, you might not see all of your inboxes. So you twist open the inbox so you see all of them. And then inside the inbox in Mail's left-hand column there, you can move things around. And if you don't see Mail's left-hand column because you are using Mountain Lion's default view, you can pull it up by going to the View menu and saying Show Mailbox List. And then that will bring up what, if you'd used Mail prior to Mountain Lion, would have been the familiar Mail view.
Oh, look at you. Because that's not the way I did it. I actually did it by highlighting the... Yeah, I didn't twist open inbox. I actually did it by highlighting the mailbox in the list further down. But actually, what you said is entirely correct because I just changed the order right now and the order of the items in the inbox mailbox also changed.
Yeah.
So either one, and actually your way is better because dragging the mailbox sometimes gets kind of squirrely.
Yeah.
In the lower menu, and then actually I accidentally at one point dragged one mailbox into another, and then it started copying all of them. And I'm like, oh man.
So your
method is much better because then you only touch the inboxes.
Right.
Very good.
Right. I do have another way of doing this though.
Go.
If you go into Mail Preferences and go to Composing, there's actually quite a few handy little things here. So in the second section, which is called Addressing, you have the last option, which says send new messages from, and you can choose either account of selected mailbox, which is what would be the setting that would make the behavior that John and I were just talking about work, or you can choose a different account, and it's going to list all of your email addresses and accounts that you have defined in here. So if you know, I always want it to go out from this address, no matter what, or at least I want this to be the default address. You can change it in the message before you send. Then you set it here. Many ways to skin this cat.
Oh.
If in fact the cat's still in the box.
Yeah. Well, if it's Schrodinger's cat, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't know.
And as a final clarification here.
Yeah.
And I found this as well. So once you select the mailbox, you will then see the email addresses under that mailbox in a certain order. Well, how, you may ask, can I change that order? And actually found that as well, is that if you go into the accounts screen and then highlight one of your accounts.
Yes.
If you change the order of the email addresses, that will influence the order in which they are listed.
So, yeah, this is one of these interesting things. For those of you that don't know about this, you can go into, as John said, Mail accounts. And if you have all of your email coming into one box, but you have multiple email addresses funneling in there, you can actually create a list. We've talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning because it's not obvious. But if you float over where it says email address, you will get a little help text that says enter one or more email addresses separated by commas. And as John said, setting the order of those sets the order for that list, but it also creates that list. And that's kind of a handy thing.
Wow.
I know. Lots of tips baked in there.
That was mail 101.
That was. Yeah. No, that was mail 201.
That was 201. Yeah. Yeah. Just getting a bit advanced there.
That's good. I like it. I like it. And so, you know, what's cool though, John, in iOS 7, that interface for managing multiple email addresses becomes a first class citizen. It you don't have to create the comma. We talked about this, but you know, you don't have to create the comma separated list. You get this whole interface for managing it, which I think is great, as it should be. A lot of people do this. Yeah. I know you and I do.
Now, when trying to help Kenny, unfortunately, there's some bad advice out there because someone else had found an article saying, oh, no, you go to the account screen and you change the order in the account screen. And I'm like,
you can do that, too.
Well, no, that doesn't work anymore.
Oh, is that right?
It's an old, old tip that I think applied to earlier versions of mail. But unless my mouse clicking foo is broken.
No, you're right.
You can't drag them. Other preference screens, sometimes you can.
Yes.
But in this case, no, because, you know, the guy said, you know, oh, no, just change the order there. And I'm like, it's not working.
That doesn't work. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Interesting. All right. Larry, and this will be a reprise for some of you, but a good one. Larry says, I am an application fiend. I always figure the more applications I have, the merrier and more productive I will be. Unfortunately and conveniently, many of the applications I use contain those little menu bar icons to function the applications, which over time crowd the menu bar to the point that I cannot see every icon. The regular Apple menu with file edit view, etc., shrinks and grows with each application hiding even more icons. And I have a 22-inch cinema display at the highest resolution, but it's still not enough room up there. Sometimes I like to shrink the screen to a lower resolution. For instance, if my wife and I are going to be doing a crossword or an application, an application will automatically shrink it. Basically, I'm getting frustrated because I cannot access some necessary menu bar items when I have the screen resolution lowered. I have to play Sophie's Choice sometimes to decide if an icon is important or not. For example, I have completely trashed both menu meters and iStat menus because those like a lot of space. Is there a solution to my problem? When Dashboard came out and I started collecting a lot of widgets, I got the awesome Amnesty application to put them all into a single menu. Is there a solution to tame this menu bar overload? Larry, indeed there is. Unlike Sophie, you need not choose between Jan or Eva. You can keep them both with Bartender at macbartender.com. It is built, purpose-built to solve exactly your problem. It's awesome. I use it on my 11-inch MacBook Air because I run into this problem very, very quickly. You know, if you have more than three or four menu bar items, it just starts getting crowded. And so Bartender solves this problem by creating a drop down menu. It's actually really full featured. The first thing it does for you, the most obvious thing, is it creates a little drop down menu in your menu bar that you can then use to configure what appears there. So you can say, look, I want iStat menus and my volume to live in the menu bar, the actual menu bar, permanently. And then all the rest of my icons to appear in this little Bartender dropdown. And that's awesome. But what you can also do is on a per menu bar item, per item, you get to decide what happens if that item has a little update. Like some items will animate if something's going on, like Dropbox will kind of do its thing when it's uploading or downloading, or CrashPlan will do the same thing. And some of them want to send you alerts this way. So when the item is updated, you can actually tell Bartender to move it up to the menu bar temporarily. And you get to set, is it there for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, whatever. And so that you get to really see what's going on, and it dynamically manages your menu bar. And it is awesome. I couldn't live on my MacBook Air without it. So I think that's going to solve your problem, Larry. I hope so. And perhaps solve the same problem for many, many, many of us. I love Bartender. I've been using it since it was in beta. I bought it immediately when it came out. You got to have it. You just got to have it. That's how it works. Good, right, John?
Splendid.
Mm-hmm. Do you use Bartender on your MacBook Pro, rather?
No.
Okay.
No, though it is a problem because, yeah, sometimes sometimes I'll be in programs where the menu choices cover up some of the things in the menu bar.
Yep.
That's bad.
It is. All right. Thomas asks, I have over 300 mailboxes in my iCloud account, which is my only email account, and I employ rules. Excuse me. Little frog in the throat. And I employ, it seems to be still there. We'll just roll with it. I employ rules on my iMac to send emails to the appropriate mailbox. I also created a smart mailbox on my Mac and on my iMac entitled Unread, which displays all of my unread emails, regardless of which mailbox the unread email message resides. I was under the impression iOS 7 would support smart mailboxes, but no such luck. However, although iOS 7 has a built-in unread smart mailbox, it only displays unread emails that reside in inboxes as opposed to all mailboxes. The problem is that when I'm away from the office and I receive an email that goes into any mailbox other than the inbox, I don't know I've received it unless I scroll through 300 messages looking for unread emails. To make matters worse, all mail folders in iOS 7 are permanently expanded and there's no way to collapse them. By the way, the same problem exists for the flagged smart mailbox in iOS 7. Only flagged emails that reside in the inbox are displayed in the flagged messages. So, you know, he says, is there any way to manage this? So there might be. There's two ways to approach this, and perhaps one or the other or a hybrid approach is what you're going to want. You are clearly a power email user. So, and that's okay. That's a good thing. You're doing all your rule based filtering on your Mac. If you were to move that rule based filtering to the mail server, a couple of nice things happen. Number one, your Mac doesn't need to be on to ensure that these rules are constantly processed. And two, you get the results of all of these rules on the mail server. Now, depending on your mail server, you know, iCloud has some limited stuff. Gmail also has some limited stuff, but it's better. You may or may not be able to do all the rules that you want to apply. Your Mac's, you know, Apple Mail for the Mac is better than it rules than a lot of the server side stuff is. But with that caveat that it happens all there. So that's one step, and kind of thinking about moving that to the server may help you rethink how you do your email and might actually help solve this problem. You might also want to consider an alternate mail client for iOS. Apple's Mail is great, but if you truly want to be a power user, there are a lot of things that, by design omits, but the guys at Eurosmarts, eurosmarts.com have a piece of software called Altmail, and I keep it on my iPhone. I go back and forth between using it as my main mail client and then also just as sort of an add-on mail client. But it is ridiculously full featured. And the cool part is if there's a feature that's not in it, if you send a support email in and it makes sense for them, they'll add it and they'll add it very quickly. It is built to be an email client for power users. And it's like I said, it's called Altmail, Altmail. And we'll put a link in the show notes, of course, but it may well be worth your while to check this out. I use it a lot of times, you know, if I need to see the headers of an email, Apple Mail won't show you that, you know, or the raw text of an email. This does it. It's got templates built into it. It's got, you can set up an auto reply, an auto responder. I mean, all kinds of crazy things in there. And my guess is with iOS 7 now with backgrounding, It's going to get even better. I can only assume that they're going to take advantage of some of that. So you can move. You could actually move some or all of your mail rules to your iPhone, which is kind of mind boggling. So check that out, because that might give you the smart mailbox flexibility that you're looking for on iOS. So there you go. That's all I got, but it's good. You know, it's good. So yes. What else do we have, John? We still have time, right?
We're running out of time.
Yeah. Let's take,
Jack
Bauer. Go ahead and do Rick. I think that's a good one to jump to there.
Yeah. So, Rick, sent us a screenshot and he says, I have a question shown in the image. I now see a black stripe labeled shared folder. And it's a screenshot of the Finder, and sure enough. Yeah. It says share folder. He's like, why is this showing up? It started a couple of days ago. And I'll tell you why it's showing up, Dave. I told him where to look to basically turn that off, because it sounds like he didn't want to share, which normally it's nice to share, but some things you may not want to share. So I said to Rick, I've seen this too. Actually, I see it when I'm on my Mac Mini, because I share a folder. I do some initial prep on my MacBook Pro, and then I transfer the files over to something I share on the Mini.
Right.
Here's where you want to look to see what the heck is going on. It sounds like, and I think what happened is he may have inadvertently shared a folder. So what you want to do is go to System Preferences, Internet and Wireless category, and then go to Sharing. And I said, I'll bet you file sharing is checked. And sure enough, I think the answer is yes, it was. And if it is, it'll then show you in a little sub window. It'll show you what folder or folders are shared, as well as which user or users may access those folders. So I was like, if you don't want to share it, uncheck the file sharing checkbox, or remove the folders you don't want to share.
Right.
And, I think that that basically solved the problem. And I think, as it turns out, he actually was sharing, doing an SMB share for some program that he had been using at some point in the past. Well, that's the other place you can look. Actually, in sharing, I think there's also, is it options, I think? So if you go to sharing, file sharing, let me double check this. All right, file sharing. Yes, there's an options button. And I think that actually lets you set the type of share, which I think could be, AFP or SMB, I think, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Let me look. Okay. All right. I had to unlock it here. Yes. So share file and folders using AFP, which I think is Apple File Protocol. And then SMB is the crummy Windows method of sharing things, which, and you can choose either one.
Yeah.
FTP is no longer there. I think that was an option.
It used to be. That's right. And I think it's still under the hood. I don't think they took the FTP server out of the OS X core, but they certainly took the UI for enabling it out of the OS X core. But that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't be using FTP anyways, because it's not very secure.
You shouldn't be using it unless you really understand how it works and what the limitations and security risks are.
I think actually the other option, I believe, Dave, but there's something called Secure FTP, and I believe that is actually based on the remote login capability.
It's not really FTP. I mean, it. I know it's called SFTP, but it's actually a completely different protocol. It's tunneling the connections and all that over the SSH, which is exactly what you said. Yeah. Yes, and that is better. I mean, without question.
And actually, as a general tip, so I'm glad Apple puts this all in one place here, but as a general tip, and I think by default, when you install the OS, nothing is on in the sharing. You want to be careful of that, especially if you're on a public Wi-Fi. Because I don't know about you, Dave, but you know, like when we travel and I go to trade shows or I'm at the airport and I'm on a public Wi-Fi, there are lots of people sharing things that I think don't mean to.
Yeah, but here you go. This is to kind of rewind back to what, two shows ago, when we realized that Little Snitch has its rules or rule sets. I forget what they're called, but you know, you can have a set that allows your machine to be accessible for file sharing when right. you're home, but when you're not home, it you know, it blocks all those ports, which actually would be a really handy thing, because I totally forget to either turn it on or off when I move around on my MacBook Air. So very handy.
Unfortunately, I don't know, maybe they'll fix this in the next OS, but I've also noticed sometimes that when I'm running I think it's either iTunes or iPhoto.
Yep.
Those programs have the ability to share as well, and they're not, yes. last I checked, included in the OS's sharing.
Well, because they're apps. They're not OS level sharing, right?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, but technically, to me, they are sharing. So it would be nice if they were under that same category.
Right, but it's not there. Those aren't running. I mean, to get a little geeky about it, those aren't running as root. Right. Those are applications right. just sharing their data out on a port over 1000. So that doesn't qualify as an OS level share. It's a right. app level share. So I mean, but I'm thinking of it from, you know, the Unix Foundation standpoint right. where it makes total sense to not include it there. From a casual user's point of view, I get what you're saying. You know, maybe it does belong here.
Because I've also found some, not so much music. Music, yeah, you know, people like to share music. But I have found some photo albums that I think people really didn't intend to share.
Yeah. With, I would agree everyone. With that. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
All right. We got time for a couple more quick ones. So we'll talk about, we'll talk about Jim, and then we'll do Jürgen, and I think that will... just to prepare you, John, I think that will send us on our way today. As long as I can find Jim's question here, which I can. We talked two shows ago about enabling scanning on the local network. And Jim writes and says, your discussion overlooked my favorite bit of software for this, called ViewScan, V-U-E scan. Says seamless multi-scanner support, lots of nifty built-in features. And the thing is, you're absolutely right, Jim. I always forget about ViewScan, and it is. I don't even want to use the word generic. It's multi-scanner. It's non-scanner dependent, right? A lot of times you get, you know, an HP printer or scanner, and you run HP software or Epsons or whatever it is. ViewScan is just scanner software. And it works with a ton of scanners out there. I don't know if I should say that it works with all of them, because I'm sure we could find one that it doesn't. Some obscure, you know, hasn't been sold in 10 year kind of scanner. But they say they've got support for over 2,100 scanners. So, yeah. And it's from Hamrick, HAMRICK.com. But of course, the link will be in the show notes. In fact, I can see that it already is. Somebody from the chat room, probably Chris Humphreys, put it out there. But who, for all of you that help us edit the show notes, I thank you. John thanks you. And I think I can speak on behalf of all the listeners. We thank you. It really does help push these things out very, very quickly for us. So it's good. Yeah, ViewScan. So check that out. And I think... It is for pay software, of course, because people, you know, these people need to make money. And they're the standard edition. It starts for $40. And then there's some other things. If you want to get really pro, you double your price and you get, like, you can create raw scan files and have different color profiles and all that stuff. So, and they say that you get free upgrades for a year. I'm looking at this. He says there's usually an upgraded version of ViewScan every week or two. So I like small software vendors that constantly release updates, release early, release often, because it's good. It, you know, keeps the bugs going and all that good stuff. So check it out. ViewScan. Good. All right, John, you want to take us home here with Jürgen's question?
I will.
A good one.
And I'm with you with the app developers. So I don't believe some of them have the nerve to charge for upgrades.
No. I think it's fun. You were joking, right?
Okay. I'm joking because okay. there's been chatter in some circles when the people release, especially when they rate the app, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe a guy did a major upgrade and I got to pay again. I'm going to give it 1 star. It's like, what's wrong with you? As you said, come on. Yeah. You know, I mean, software takes work and time and effort. You should be paid. And I would agree that major upgrades, I mean, you know, some of the programs I had, though, they went for ages before they wanted more money.
I know. I think
Graphic Converter was one of them.
Yeah.
They went forever. And at one point they're like, yeah, you know, we're doing a major upgrade. We want $25 or whatever. I'm like, yep, here you go. Yep.
Here's your money. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And Jürgen is going to help wrap it up here. And I don't know if I have an answer. I got a suggestion. Maybe you could get your thoughts on this here. So Jürgen says, hi, guys. I have a LaCie 4Big Quadra connected to a Mac Mini via FireWire. The LaCie goes to sleep from time to time, which is really annoying since it is also mounted from other remote Macs. If it then goes to sleep, the remote Mac sometimes can't find it anymore. I installed the LaCie Desktop Manager, hoping to get an option to prevent sleeping, but the LDM can't find the LaCie. All right, so I thought I'd open the terminal, CD to the LaCie, and then he enters the following, which actually looks kind of clever here. Ping, space, dash I, which I believe is interval, space 60, space 127.0.0.1, which is the local IP address, space, then a greater than? Yeah, I think it's a greater than. Space test.txt. And I think what he's trying to accomplish there is to constantly or on 1 minute intervals write to this file called test.txt.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll have to see if this works or if some caching prevents it. Can you think of a better / other solution? And yes, I can. So one, I would wonder, since it is hardwired, I would go to system preferences, hardware, energy saver. And you're going to see a checkbox that says put hard disks to sleep when possible. I would make sure that's not checked. So that may be one way to solve this. The other is that, yes, as far as I know, some drives have this setting embedded in their firmware and you need the vendor's software. So what I'd say is yell at LaCie and get this software working so you can hopefully undo this setting. And that's all I have. I don't know. I like his suggestion. That's kind of clever. And I think it should prevent it.
Yeah, it will.
If the OS is enforcing it, I'm not sure who's doing it. Again, I don't know if the drive is doing it or if the OS is saying, oh, okay, yeah, go to sleep, please.
Right. So his solution is perfectly valid. It's ingenious and it's actually a very commonly accepted way of doing things. In a sort of meta sense, right? I mean, it's just, you know, write something to the drive frequently enough that the drive never hits its sleep timeout. That's sort of the general gist behind it. The only problem with his way of doing it is he's just getting data back from pinging the local machine, and he's doing it once a minute and then echoing the results out to a file. Totally will accomplish his goal. However, the file is going to grow because of the way he's structured this Unix command. So it's not a lot of data. I mean, you're talking about one line, you know, maybe 80, you know, bytes of text or something. But it is going to grow this file. So there are other commands that can do this. The touch command is often used to do this. And I believe in the current version of OS X, I guess it depends on how the hard drive's formatted, but I think using touch, which all it does is it makes the file act like it's been written to at whatever time you'd said to touch it. And then that keeps the drive awake because the drive's got to write this change. But there is someone that has taken care of packaging this all up for you. And John Stovall is a shareware developer. And he has a piece of software called Keep Drive Spinning. And I think we can surmise what that is meant to do. And in fact, it does this. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. And that would do it. So And he keeps a zero byte file going, and he makes it hidden with Keep Drive Spinning. So it's a little cleaner than this other solution, but it will accomplish the same goal. So that's what we got. That's how it works. That's how we roll. And I believe, John, that is how we're going to roll to the outro. Wow. I did want to say something.
Why?
Go ahead.
Oh,
well, about, you know, I was talking earlier in the show about selling our old iPhones back to either Gazelle or, you know, back to your carrier, or putting it on eBay. If you're going to put it on eBay, where things get really valuable for you is if your phone is out of contract and you have the ability to unlock it. But the trick is you need to unlock it before you sell it on eBay. And I do not know what this process is like for Verizon. I tried doing some searching about it, and it's kind of weird. You probably need to call them and see what you need to do. But for AT&T, there is a little web form that you can use. And I used it earlier this week. And within an hour or maybe two, they say it could take 48 hours to process the unlock request. Within an hour or two, the unlock was done. The way it works is, you get the carrier to unlock it in their system, and then you have to do a full restore from iTunes on the phone, because that forces the phone to reactivate itself. And when it goes through it, you'll actually get a little screenshot in iTunes that said this phone is now unlocked. And by unlocked, what it means is it can now work with any carrier that supports that phone. So, you know, with a GSM phone, you can put any carrier's SIM in it. And it'll work internationally and all that good stuff. And that makes it more valuable when you're going to go sell it, for obvious reasons.
Oh, look at this.
Yeah.
And someone posted in the chat room a way you can check. I don't know who these guys are. I'll assume it's trustworthy. But there's a website, iPhoneIMEI.info.
Very cool.
Or if you enter, yeah, it's some sort of unique identifier, I guess, for the phone, the IMEI.
Right.
It'll tell you.
Right, right, right.
Now, the other thing that's been pointed out to me before you sell your phone is that even if you do reset it, which is buried in one of the menus, I believe you also want to unregister it from Find My iPhone.
That's true.
Yes. Because I believe now, especially with iOS 7, access to the phone is can be restricted. So
that's right.
Yeah, I got to remember to do that before I send mine off.
Yep. Yep.
So they have instructions to do that, but... Yeah, I don't. The thing is, I think the phone I'm going to get, Dave, I think has a SIM. My current one does not, because it's CDMA. But I think the 5S from Verizon, I think, is GSM capable. But I said no when I ordered it. They're like, "Are you going to use this phone internationally?" And I'm like, "No."
Right.
So I think I have the option in the future if I'd like to.
Yeah, I believe it's the same hardware. iPhone 5 and 5S is same hardware for all carriers. I think that I'm pretty sure that's what they did. And then
they have some
configuration tweaks. Yep.
Okay, so I'll have a little SIM slot.
Not true. Okay, so Brian Monroe in the chat room is saying that the phones aren't exactly the same for all the carriers.
Oh, all right.
All right. I thought I know there's three SKUs.
If they're asking me, then I would assume that, I may not get one, but if I wanted to use it overseas at some point, I should be able to, right?
I thought so. I was under the impression that the hardware in terms of that was the same for all carriers. And I know that there are different configurations of it, but I thought they all had the same radios in them. I thought that was a big thing about the iPhone 5, was that they just said, done. You know, we're going to make one of these. But I might be wrong. I may have misunderstood that. So we will research. That's good. If you have thoughts on... Okay, so people in the chat room are saying that there are different radios in the different phones. So your phone may not be able to go international, John.
I think, again, when I upgraded, they said, do you plan on using this? You can change your mind later, but I think it influences what they will ship it with.
Okay.
I think I can at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, I thought they were the same... I don't know. We'll have to dig deeper. Anyway, if you have thoughts about this or questions or anything else that you want to send us, feedback@MacGeekGab.com is the address to which you can send all that.
Muffins also, which I believe Lisa is making some as we speak, Dave.
Yeah, but the muffins are for the newly most important member of the household, Hector.
But if you wanted to send us muffins, via email. You can't do that. That's crazy talk, at least not with current technology. I agree with you, Dave. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
That's feedback@MacGeekGab.com. Indeed. Yep. And for those of you that want to go above and beyond, and you certainly don't have to, but for those of you that do want to go above and beyond and offer some more direct support to the show, we do have our premium program, which you've heard us talk about. MacGeekGab.com is where you can learn all about this, and you can join this premium program. There are many levels. You've all asked for different amounts, over time to pay to contribute, and that's great. We've got a $10 a month plan if you want that. We've got $25 every 6 months if you want to do it a little more slowly, and that's totally fine. Our gift back to you is for every $100 threshold that you hit, you will qualify for the next free premium gift. And we just did our first round of water bottles. In fact, I'm going to make the image, the faceplate image for this episode, my favorite picture of where one of these water bottles has been, at least that I've seen so far. So I'll let you all see that when it when you look down at the MP3 or the stock AAC image that sits kind of on the front of the show. And I'll make sure Michael has it for the MP3. So thank you for those of you that already have supported. Obviously, it makes a huge difference for John and I. And for those of you that want to support MacGeekGab.com, and you will see links right there. We've tried to make it super easy, and we've got a great system in place now. Third time's the charm, I will say, with that. So, yavol. And you get the bonus. Once you are a premium supporter, you do get the bonus of using the premium at MacGeekGab.com address, which we do prioritize. We do try to get through everything. I got to be honest, this week I didn't get through all the stuff in the main feedback box, but I'll catch up with it because I can't let it go. I'm just like, I'm totally CDO about that. CDO, of course, John, is OCD in alphabetical OCD order, like it should be. That's right. All right, what else we got, John?
What else? The Twitters. And I'm going to give a plug here to if you would like to become a minion, then you may want to check out Hector D. Bird.
That's right.
On Twitter.
Yes.
And I keep telling
that's
Bird
with a Y.
Near, yeah. Yes, Hector D. Byrd, if you want to follow the antics of Hector.
She's crazy.
I'm a satisfied minion. Yeah, she's a nut. I keep telling her, if you get too close to my grill, watch out, Bird. I don't know. She'd be kind of tough, don't you think?
Yeah.
Anyways, but in addition to Hector, if you would like to follow me, I am John F. Braun. If you want to follow him, he is Dave Hamilton. The podcast is Mac Geek Gab. The publication is Mac Observer.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/MacGeekGab. I try to create the event there more than about 9 hours before we record the show, and I usually succeed. So you'll know when upcoming live streams are happening, for those of you that are interested, but also when the show comes out, when the show notes come out, and other interesting links. And as we went through in the show today, we do some Q&A there as well, so you can follow along with some of that. So it's all good. Is that it? Are we good, John? Have we hit the... have we hit the threshold? Great. So, you know, in fact, I confirmed this when I met with Magnus, with John Champlin this week. It is entirely your fault that we have wound up with Hector, because when I posted that tweet a month ago saying I just talked Lisa out of getting lovebirds and talked her into getting an African gray instead, you replied saying you should adopt Hector de Bird. And John saw that and reached out to me, and that was the catalyst that started all of this. So thank you.
And I commented that I may have a career in getting animals hooked up with people that deserve them. And I chose those words very carefully.
I knew that you had. That's right.
I think you deserve it. I want to meet her.
Oh, you got to come and meet her.
I mean, some of the pictures are hilarious, especially the one where after she did a shot, I can almost see like this little gleam in her eye. Like,
Hanging
upside down. I mean, yeah. it's crazy.
She's crazy. It's great. It's awesome. We had this thing the other day. I was in the other room and she did this like whistle melody. and I whistled another melody back to her, and we went back and forth for 10 minutes doing, like, you know, riffing on whistle melodies and stuff back and forth. It's so cool. It's really cool. It's another little brain in the house. It's cool. All right. Speaking of the house, I got to get back. Oh, I knew it. We ran out. I ran out of vamp. That's the first time since I extended it, John. We've rambled too long. So we do want to thank Michael Johnston. Oh, I got to bring the vamp back. It's just too weird. All right, fine. We do have to thank Michael Johnston. I want to thank Michael Johnston. He's the host of We Have Communicators, a great podcast about iOS and apps and all kinds of stuff. You should definitely listen. He's also the one that converts this show to AAC and adds all the chapters, which I know many of you really, really love. So thank you, Michael, for all your hard work there. Also, Cashfly, CACHEFLY.com with the hosting that brings this show from us to you. In the podcast marketplace is BB Edit and Yojimbo from Barebone Software, Text Expander, PDF Pen Pro, PDF Pen Scan from Smile, Gazelle, of course, to easily turn your old iPhone into cash, and Squarespace, don't forget, for a couple more days, MGG9 gets you 20% off, all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. All right, John, share the advice, share the love. What do you got?
In this case, I will share, Dave. And what I'm going to share is that you should never get caught.
Made up.